serving veterans from sea to shining sea. You're listening to Hometown Heroes with Paul Leffler.
Welcome back to Hometown Heroes, and a bittersweet reality today with a program that was recorded while Dr. Bill Cott and his powerful personality were still with us, but is airing now a week later in the wake of his passing at the age of 97. Dr. Cott's son, Paul, was present for the interview, and I wanted to share some of his perspective with you, especially when I realized that much of what we heard today was never mentioned while Paul was growing up. I started by asking him if, in those childhood years, he was even aware that his father had served in World War II.
I knew he was a veteran because in a closet in our garage were his military jackets and clothing. And we still have them, by the way. We still have his full outfit of jacket, sergeant shirt with a chevron emblazoned on, pants, socks, the gloves that he was talking about. The only thing we don't have, I think, is the boots. We still have the hat. So I treasure those things. And his trunk, his Army trunk with his name on it. But more than anything, just to add a postscript to everything that you both have been talking about, is what formed his life has helped form our lives, my brother and I's lives, because we don't take for granted anything. Because of what you said, it was God's will that my dad made it through that very difficult time, for whatever the reasons were, poor German marksmanship or divine intervention or who knows what. And lo and behold, here we are. And so we have to make the best of it. And that's been my dad's whole life, is taking what is his the hand that he was dealt, and even though it wasn't a good hand, to make the best of it. And if we can wake up every day and make the best of that day, no matter what might come, then we stand a good chance of adding to that day. And the cumulative effect of making the most out of every day makes for a good life. So, because so many people don't, and they don't have that guidance. In our case, I was fortunate. We were fortunate because we had something he didn't have. We had parental guidance that kind of gave us a great springboard into life. Gave us a great foundation to build our own lives out of. And my dad gave us enough latitude to make our own mistakes, learn from those mistakes, try not to make them again, and give us enough desire to and reasons to want to build on those mistakes. The old adage of, it's not if you're going to fall down or not, we're all going to fall down. It's how you get back up and what you do once you're back up on your feet. And so my brother and I, we've had our share of situations where they didn't go our way and things like that, but we try to build on it. But we always lean back to what my father and his father, even though his father and he were somewhat estranged, I think about that. I think about coming here from another country, in their case, to escape whatever the factors were at the time, and probably to come to another country to save their own life.
They escaped the German Empire in World War I?
Yeah, and so consequently, persecution of one sort or another. And when you do that, you leave behind your family, you leave behind your culture, you leave behind your language, you leave behind your wealth. And when I say your wealth, I don't mean any great wealth. I mean whatever wealth you might have had, whatever degree that might have been. And it doesn't matter the measure, you leave it behind because you're not going to come back and get it. And back then it was not as simple as it is now. You can take a jet plane and be on the other side of the earth, you know, by tomorrow, not then. Once you left on a boat and you're not coming back. Chances of coming back were so remote it was not even a discussion item. So when you leave all that behind, you only do so to save your life and to know that your family's future, no matter how small your family is or how big it is, your family's future is going to be better in a new place, in a new country, than it was in the country that you're leaving, even though you don't possess language skills, you don't possess whatever it might need, you need to possess, you don't possess relationships in your new country. You have to give up your life so that future generations can lead a better life. And this is so disturbing in today's culture for me. And I try to do what I can to help educate, because a lot of people come here from other countries. I've dealt for many years with people from other countries, kids especially, that don't appreciate the fact that their parents and their maybe even grandparents gave up their whole lives so that they can have a better life here. And this is something I live my life by the example that was set by grandparents and my parents, being a son of immigrants that came looking for a better life, looking for that opportunity.
And I get the sense that, you know, specifically with his role in the liberation of Buchenwald and a witness to history there, that your understanding of that has been almost like peeling layers of an onion the last couple of years, that you really didn't know the extent of it?
Indeed.
What can you tell us about that? When did that world open up to your understanding?
I would say in the last 20 years, American society has been more welcoming of veterans coming back to this country, providing them with things that they need to help them assimilate back into mainstream society, and demonstrate more gratitude towards veterans of previous wars, Korean Wars, World War II. It's evidenced by memorials, monuments, museums that have been built, New Orleans, Washington, D.C., different examples of gratitude. If someone knows that you're a veteran, they almost can't help themselves but to say thank you for your service. Thank you for your service is a common part of American jargon now. It's a very typical to hear that. It's not unusual to see a serviceman in uniform at a restaurant. His bill will be taken care of. So in the past 20 years, there's been more focus, more of a spotlight on veterans, their plight, and what they come back to live by. Because in my dad's era, they didn't talk about PTSD. And these guys, they just came in and had to just somehow place their past 4 years or 2 years, whatever it was. They had to compartmentalize that in some place and put it somewhere. And some of the guys put it pretty deep in a place where no one ever goes. So my dad was one of those guys. He never talked about it. He was too busy with trying to take his experience and make it something positive, I believe. And he lived that. He lived by that. It wasn't just talk. It was he walked that talk. And it wasn't just talk. And so consequently, my brother and I learned by that. And we have lived our life in that same mode. And we hope that our kids will learn from that as well. And we can't emphasize enough that freedom is not free. And somebody paid the price for that. And in our case, I guess if it wasn't for guys like Dad, we'd all be speaking German or Japanese.
And you certainly wouldn't have been one of 17,000 plus at a Anaheim Ducks game cheering for your dad when he was on it. What was that like? What kind of emotions did that stir?
Prideful ones. For most of the people there, my dad was just another guy who had served his country and another wartime hero of sorts that got recognized for his service and for his contribution to his country. But for as a family member to watch all those people and dad was speechless. And as you can see, that's hard to do.
And is it true that you didn't know until about the last year or so that he had actually taken photos at Buchenwald?
That's right. We had moved my father from his home that he lived in for 60 years. And in so doing, we uncovered a lot of old family memorabilia, including his trunk of his army clothing and military things, weapons, ammo, photographs, all kinds of amazing keepsakes, probably some authorized, some otherwise. But it was certainly a treasure trove of history and of family participation that my dad got to experience firsthand and has gotten to share with his family, which I'm very grateful for. One of the amazing benefits of all this, Paul, is kind of my dad has become this sort of local celebrity given his age and given his accomplishments. Consequently, as I mentioned, he gets asked frequently to participate in things involving the Holocaust and different things, including the programs involving the survivors of the Holocaust, which are well chronicled here, and one about my father as well. And so that, and then the meeting with the Shoah Foundation with Steven Spielberg was an amazing opportunity. And we were literally in a private area with Tom Hanks and his wife and Steven Spielberg and his wife and his father talking about World War II. And for about a half hour before we all had to go out to a dinner, my father says, he kind of looks back at me and says, do you have any idea who these people are? And I said, well, yeah, Dad, they're really famous people. And he said, really? He said, what are they famous for? And so I told him, he says, well, let's eat and just get out of here. I want to go home.
Priorities. Well, last thing, and again, if there's something you want to add, feel free. If I were coming at you out of the blue and hadn't heard everything we've been hearing from your dad and from you, and I just said, tell me about your dad. Who's your dad? What's he all about? How would you describe him? How do you see him?
The word that jumps right out off the page to me is integrity. What you see is what you get. You don't have to guess. It's no baloney. It's just you ask a question, he'll give you the answer the way from his perspective. And his perspective is what worked for him for his whole life. My father has a unique perspective in that he had to be a survivor. He was chronicled as the liberator, but from what he had to come out of as a kid and as a young man, from his family situation, from that very stoic East European upbringing, there wasn't one minute of frivolity. There wasn't any normal things that most kids grow up with today. It was, everything was, every day was serious. Every day was, how are you going to survive today? And then he gets in the service, and every day, literally, how are you going to survive today? You don't know the password. You got to, what are you going to eat? You know, how are we going to survive the night? How are we going to survive the elements? So at age 22, 23, 24, when he was discharged, that was his foundation. That was his foundation. He had to be a scrapper. He had to be someone who had to go out and get it. With that in mind, he had to fight for everything that he had. Like he said, working 7 days a week wasn't a big deal to him. And you talk to somebody now and say, hey, how would you like to work 7 days a week? They'd look at you like you're crazy. But it was just what he had to do to get it done. And so these are the things that, you know, who's my dad? My dad is a guy that started with zero and ended up with a lot. I'm not talking about material things. I'm talking about some incredible blessings, family and good health, good friends. When you boil it all down, that's a pretty good life.
Sounds like you're pretty proud of him.
Very much so.
Paul Cott talking about his father, Dr. Bill Cott, who finished his journey here on Earth January 8th at the age of 97. I don't know about you, but I heard a lot of things today that give me pause, that give me a little perspective. I'm very thankful for the privilege of sharing Dr. Cott's story with you today. Again, please do keep the family in your prayers. That's all the time we have for Hometown Heroes this time. I'm Paul Leffler, reminding you again that freedom is not free.